Okay, good evening, everyone. This week's parsha is Parsha Shmini, Tavshin Ayin Ches. We'll start from the beginning, the Art Scroll, page 588. That's Perek Tes Mishnah Aleph. Vayihi Yom HaShmini, it was on the eighth day. They say referring to the eighth day of the Kohanim going through their inauguration process into being the Kohanim. There was a seven-day process. And now it's the eighth day. And on that eighth day, Kara Moshe, Moshe called La'aron Ulavanov to Aaron and his sons, La'zikna Yisrael, and to the elders of Israel. And this was going to be the final process of bringing Aaron and his children into the kahuna, into the being the Kohanim. So on this pasuk, the Aruch Hayim has a fascinating explanation, or fascinating insight. Just on this first pasuk, where it says, it was on the eighth day Moshe called to Aaron and his sons and to the elders of Israel. And the Aruch Hayim writes, Dak ya'isa davar kazesh, yitin gudula hanoidas loy lezulasai, luyiya achiv, kasha yizchayav la'aseisa, loyishleit menafshay, aseisa begimel shlemiyais. When a person has to now basically give over greatness or a high status to someone other than themselves, a status that they see that could have been theirs, and in Moshe Rabbeinu's case, at one point of time, was supposed to be his, but he lost it. But whenever you have a situation where a person has to now basically give over greatness, give over a status of greatness, a status of prominence to someone else, a status that they see that they could themselves have had, typically they are not going to be able to have enough self-control to perform the act in three of the most positive or wholesome ways of doing it. The first way, if you want to do something and you want to do it in a perfect way, in a whole way, what do? You do it by mehiris. Do it with speed. Do it with alacrity, enthusiasm. You don't just schlep around and just kind of like, you know, schlep around and do it slow and sluggish. You do it with excitement. You do it with life. You do it with enthusiasm. Okay? Well, if I have to now basically put someone else in a status of prominence, which I thought I could have, which I see I could have had, right? Typically, I'm not going to do it with a lot of excitement. I'm going to kind of drag it out because it's not really something I want to do. That's number one. V'habeis, the next thing is, v'tziraf b'chinas hadragish yeshna medavar. He's not going to basically put together all the different aspects that basically add to this greatness. Meaning, as he's going to say in this case, you've got Moshe has to basically bring in Aaron and Aaron's children into the kahuna. So not only is Aaron getting into the kahuna and he's not, Aaron's children are getting status, which Moshe Rabbeinu's children did not. So imagine you have to go ahead now and again, you have to again attribute a certain level of status to someone else and their children. Okay? So what are you going to do? You're not going to do them all at one time. You're going to say, today we're going to do you, and over the rest of the week we'll do the kids. You know, you don't want everything coming together at one time. It's very difficult. That's the second. The third, asiyas adam befirsum lifnei rabim. Okay, the third thing is that you don't want to do it too public, right? You're not really looking to publicize, right, the fact that somebody else got the status you didn't get. So a person who now has to basically give status and greatness to someone else, something that he could have seen as his own, typically is not going to have these three aspects of shleimus, these three aspects of wholesomeness in the act that they're doing. But here the Torah is coming to say that Moshe was different. Moshe had enough control over himself that he would do these things even under these circumstances. Keneged HaMehiris, regarding the question that a person in this kind of status won't do it too quickly, too enthusiastically, he'll do it kind of schleppy. Omar Bayoim HaShmini. The pasuk says, Vayihi Bayoim HaShmini, was on the eighth day. Pirish B'yois HaBoiker. Tar Lev Loi Ikev. Elotekev Kara La'arin L'Seisloya Kahuna V'Loinis Atzel. Number one, it was on the eighth day. When on the eighth day was it? Says Dar HaChaim, if it says it was on the eighth day, that means as soon as it became the eighth day, as soon as it came the time to go ahead and put Aaron into his state of being the Kohen Gadol, Moshe Rabbeinu right away did it. He wasn't lax, he wasn't lazy, he wasn't sluggish about it. He went in and did it. Vayihi bayom hashmini, on the eighth day, as soon as it became day eight, Kara Moshe l'Aaron l'Levanav, Moshe called to Aaron and his sons.
At night?
No. Karbanos has to be by day.
All right.
Okay. Good point. Beis. Asar hadavar betziref bechinas hadraga shosanakun la aron ulaban of yachad. Okay. The second part is not only you call Aaron, he called his children. He did it all together. Everything came together. Didn't spread it out. So again, although Aaron and his children were going to become Kohanim, Moshe wasn't going to be a Kohen. Not only that, his own kids weren't getting into any kind of status, and eventually they never got into any kind of status. Still, again, the same alacrity, the same enthusiasm went to calling Aaron and calling his sons at the same time together. Not breaking it up, but putting everything together. Okay? Again, all this shows that that Moshe was not feeling any kind of grudge. He wasn't feeling any kind of sadness. On the contrary, he was happy for them. Okay? And the third is the fact that it says that what Moshe Rabbeinu did it, he called Aaron his sons, and who else? Ziknei Yisrael, the elders, meaning it was going to be public, in front of all the elders, in front of all the important, prominent people of the Jewish people who was doing this. So the pasuk is showing us that Moshe in no way bore any kind of grudge or any kind of hesitation in making his brother and his nephews into the Kohanim. He did it right away. He wasn't lazy. He wasn't lax. Number two, he did it all together. As hard as that could be, he did it all together. And he did it in public in front of the elders. V'zeyoyra al shleimus harotzen l'aseis ritzayne yisparach v'kofar g'shoysev. This shows how whole Moshe Rabbeinu's desire was to do the will of Hashem, the kafar gashaitzav, and he overcame his emotions. Those typical emotions that someone else would have, Moshe overcame, he controlled those emotions, he overcame those emotions, and on the contrary, he wholeheartedly did the will of Hashem that Hashem wanted him to do at this point of time. So that's a beautiful insight from the Aruch Hayim on this first pasuk. Okay. Let's take a look at Pasuk Beis. Vayomer el Aaron. And Moshe said to Aaron, Kach lecha egel, take for yourself a calf, ben bakar, a calf, lechatas for a sin offering, v'ayel le'oyla temimim, and a ram for a burnt offering, both animals being without blemish, v'akrev lefnei Hashem, and bring it before God. V'al b'nei Yisrael tedaber lemar, to the Jewish people you should say, your sin offering is going to be a goat, the egel and a calf, v'cheves b'nei shana t'mimim le'oila, and a calf and a lamb year within the first year, unblemished for a burnt offering. V'shar v'ayel l'shlamim, an ox and a ram for a peace offering, l'zboyach lefnei Hashem, to offer before God, u'mincha b'lulav Hashemen, with a meal offering mixed with oil, ki hayoyim, for today Hashem nira, Aleichem Hashem shall be appearing to you. Okay. So the Aruch Hayim again focuses on the word lecha. Moshe says to Aaron, kach lecha, take for yourself an egel for a sin offering. Why? What do you mean take for yourself? Take. Right? You say to Moshe, take. It means you take. Why did he need to say lecha? So the Gemara says, Gemara Yuma says, that the lecha was coming to teach Moshe, Aaron rather, that when he brought these animals for his offerings, it had to be from his own. Very often we find the Torah says, lekachtem loch by lulav and esrig. It says, lekachtem lochem, take for yourselves. And we darshan, and the Gemara tells us, lochem means mishel lochem, from yours. It's got to be yours. So here too, the Gemara Yuma says, these animals that Aaron brought for a sacrifice had to be his personal sacrifices. Had to come from his funds, not from public funds. Unlike the sacrifice of the Jewish people that came from public funds and all the other communal sacrifices that came from public funds, this sacrifice had to come from his own funds. That's what the Gemara says. The Aruch Hayim suggests another explanation. Why does it say take for yourself? What's this word for yourself about taking the egel for a sin offering? So says the Aruch Hayim, and this is also a very interesting discussion he gets into, is he says, think about it. He says, what is the sin offering here? This is what's the chatas? What animal are we using for the chatas, for the sin offering? What are we using? An eagle. We're using a calf. Now, these sacrifices that Aaron was going to be bringing, the Jewish people are going to be bringing, were atonement for the sin of the golden calf. That still would have to be atoned for before the Shekhinah were to rest in the Mishkan, which was also part of the process of atonement for the Jewish people. So in essence, Aaron is bringing an eagle for a sin offering. Now, if Aaron is bringing an eagle for a sin offering, then that has to mean that when it came to the eagle, to the calf, to the golden calf, Aaron did not directly sin, or he was not considered doing an act of sin when it came to the golden calf itself. Because if he would have been considered actively involved in the sin of the golden calf, he couldn't bring a calf for a sin offering. We have a rule, ein kateger nasas aneger. We know that the prosecutor can't be the defender. So therefore, the point is that if Aaron could bring the eagle for a sin offering, then that has to mean that Aaron is innocent of that sin. And the Arachayim is working with the idea, as he will elaborate a little bit later on when he has to answer a different question. But it would seem that the Arachayim's approach to Aaron's involvement was that Aaron said, bring me the gold. Aaron said, and they brought him the gold. He tied it up in a bundle, and he chucked it into the fire. He didn't do anything more. He brings a Medrash Tanchuma that says, two sorcerers, two Egyptian sorcerers, their names were Yanus and Yumbrus. They were the ones who actually did something to bring about the golden calf. So Aaron is, so the point is, kach lecha, take for yourself, means to say, the fact that you could bring this eagle, this calf, a calf, as a sin offering, it's for your benefit, it's for you. Because it shows your innocence, it shows that you were not considered sinning when it came to the golden calf. Because otherwise you couldn't bring a calf as a sin offering. The Jewish people, on the other hand, was read in Pasuk Gimel, for their sin offering, they can't bring an eagle. For the sin offering, it's a Seir Izim, it's a goat. They can't bring an eagle, they can't bring a calf. Because the same way that we know that Aaron cannot enter on Yom Kippur to the Holy of Holies wearing his golden garments because Ein Kategar Nasas Anegar, gold is a reminder of the golden calf, and therefore in that state, he cannot be coming atoning for the Jewish people on Yom Kippur. So here too, when it came to the Jewish people, they couldn't use an eagle, they couldn't use a calf for an atonement because they sinned with the calf. However, the fact that Aaron is bringing an eagle, that's a sign that he wasn't sinning with the calf. Now, at the same time, right, we know that Aaron was not innocent when it came to the golden calf. We know that. And therefore, how are we to understand the fact that Aaron is bringing an eagle as an atonement? I mean, he was culpable, right? We know that he was held responsible for the golden calf. Therefore, how could it be that Hashem is telling him actually to bring an eagle as an atonement? So therefore he says like this. He says is that what this means is, the reason is the following. The calf, right? The golden calf came out and they started worshiping it. Was Aaron guilty of that? Did he worship it? He didn't worship it. Did he want to bring its worship? He didn't want to bring its worship. It came out beyond his control. And therefore, he had no active involvement in the worshiping of the golden calf itself. Mm-hmm. But where he did have active involvement is in the gathering of the gold. Right? That he did command. That he did say, you got to bring. That he had to bring. And although his intentions were, again, he never thought they'd give up the gold. And he thought it could be a big delay. Everything that Aaron did the whole time was to delay the Jewish people, hoping Moshe may be able to come down in time, the Jewish people would then realize and not sin. Okay, so clearly he didn't mean for it to go wrong, but this is where it went wrong. This is where he went wrong. And this is where his involvement was. So his involvement was not with the golden calf per se, but rather with the gathering of the gold. Therefore, when it comes to his atonement, therefore, could he bring an eagle, a calf, for an atonement for what he did wrong? Yeah, he could. Because eagle, the calf itself, was nothing that he did wrong. That an eagle can't be his form of atonement. Why do you need to be an eagle? That I don't have an answer for exactly. But the point is that it could be an eagle because of the fact that he didn't sin with the eagle. But as I mentioned before, the Rebbeinu Shlomo tells Aaron, you can't come into the Kodesh HaKadoshim wearing gold. You can't come into the Kodesh HaKadosh, you can't come into the Holy Holies on Yom Kippur wearing gold, because gold is where you were active. Gold is where you messed up. Gold is where you sinned. The gathering of the gold was where you sinned. And therefore, where is Aaron? When Aaron cannot wear gold into the Kodesh HaKadosh, the Holy of Holies on Yom Kippur, because it's Ein Kateger Nasas Aneger. The prosecutor can't be the defender. But an eagle wasn't a prosecutor for Aaron because the eagle part of the sin, which was the worshiping of the calf, and even the actual creation of the calf, that he didn't do it. And therefore we have this distinction. So therefore, kach lecha. So again, let's just review. The Gemara says, it says kach lecha, take for yourself, to teach Aaron that the sacrifice that he brought now had to come from his own personal funds. The Arachayim wants to suggest another explanation, that it says lecha, take for yourself, because lecha is saying that by taking the egel, bringing an egel as a form of atonement, that is going to be for you. That's for your benefit. That's going to show that you are innocent when it came to any involvement in the calf itself. However, he was involved in the gathering of the gold, and therefore there is an issue of gold with Aaron, and therefore Aaron cannot wear gold when he comes to the Kodesh HaKadosh and Yom Kippur to atone for the Jewish people, because the gold of the golden calf, that was where he was culpable. Okay. So that's the two comments from the Arachayim there. Now, I want to share with you another very interesting comment from the Arachayim. He says it a few psukim later in Pasuk Hey, where he's discussing the idea of a carbon in general. Remember, we discussed this a while ago, went through the Sefer Achinuch, talking about what's the point of a carbon. So the Arachayim, just want to share with you how he explains it.
I'm thirsty.
Please. Okay.
I don't know about you. You know.
Thank you. Now, so the Arachayim asks like this. Okay. V'isi las slave be'inyan lefimasha kadam lanu. Ki nishba Hashem lahamid ha'olam b'ruah b'mishpat. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world to run on mishpat, to run on justice. Okay? V'chalo emer HaKadosh Baruch Hu vatrin yavatrin b'nei meyav. Remember, he says HaKadosh Baruch Hu just lets things go. His kishkas should be let go. His insides should be let go. No such thing as just letting things go. Imikein ma nefesh ha-choytas mishpatahi tamus k'maymer ha-navi echyavi kreben v'yifter. Therefore, if the real judgment of a person who sins is death, then how does a carbon work? Now, in the beginning of this piece on Pasuk Chesrav, not Pasuk Hey, he brings down a Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says, famous saying from the Yerushalmi, Shu'alu l'nevuah, it was asked to prophecy, Chayte ma'onshay, if a person sins, what's his punishment? Omra ha'nefesh ha'chaytas hi tamus, said nevuah, you know what should happen to a person who sins? Dead. He should not live. Well, it's Adrachme Hashem, Amar Yavi Karban. But it's Hashem's mercy that says you can bring a sacrifice instead. So the Arachayim is asking now, all right, it's very nice that Hashem has Rachmanis. But whenever we deal with Hashem's Rachmanis, Hashem's mercy, somewhere down the line, Mishpat has to be dealt with. Mishpat has to be answered. Judgment has to be answered. Righteousness has to be answered. If a person who sins deserves death, where is the Mishpat? Where is the truth? Where is the judgment? Where is the justice in just letting him go? It's mercy, but everything is supposed to come together, work together with judgment. Where is the judgment? How does it make sense? So he says like this. V'nira ki tam nochen yesh b'davar al pi ha-mishpat. No, there is a explanation to this by mishpat. There is a rational explanation and an explanation that makes sense based on in the sphere of judgment. A person who sins is not acting like a human being. What's he acting like? Like an animal.
Yeah.
We had in Sefer HaChinuch, if you remember. Al derech amram zal, as our sages say, ein adam over avera, a person is not sin. Some kind of spirit of insanity takes him over. He loses his seichel, he uses his intellect, he uses his self-control, he loses his humanity. V'nasabeh becomes like an animal who just reacts to its instinct, to its desires. U'v'yayim shachazar b'tshuva, now when he repents, what's happening? Ruachi be'enosh v'yal madrekas v'yam madrekas adam. He comes back to being a person. When he realizes what he did was wrong, and he repents, and he decides he's not going to do it again, at that point of time, what does he do? He brings himself back to the level of a real human being. Ha'im roi hu lahamis adam zetachas behema? So what are you going to do? You're going to kill an animal and play? The one who sinned was an animal. Now you have a man. Is that right? Is that right to kill a man for what an animal did? Therefore, laze yavi dugmas hachayte shubahema. Therefore, instead, what do? You bring something that's more similar to what he was when he sinned, an animal. Okay? V'yishtatev imo betzar hachayshev kiroi hu lasayis by mitzvot betzah. At the same time, he should be thinking that for that when he acted as an animal, that was what he deserved. And now, based on this aspect of feeling, right, of feeling the fact that he should have died, that's also going to help for this. That's going to help for this. So there's a combination here, says the Aruch Hayim. The combination is, you know why it makes sense for a carbon to work? You know why it makes sense that even though we say a sinner should die, that we give him a chance not to die? The answer is because when he sinned, he was like an animal. And now that he's done tshuva, he's like a human being. So now he's different than he was before. He's not the same thing as he was before. And therefore, he shouldn't die. Okay, but what is he? But he still has to do something, right? He's still got to do something with the animal aspect of him that sinned. So the answer is he brings something that was similar to what he was when he sinned, an animal. And he says, and he goes through the feeling of the fact that, you know, from the animal, from his animal part that he was before, he should have been killed. He should have been killed then. I should give him a chance to get back to his humanity. But it's in essence, at that point of time, as an animal, he should have been killed. And the fact that he now feels that and imagines that and contemplates that, that's not going to be enough to be able to save him and to atone for him. So therefore, the Aruch Hayim says, the aspect of mishpat, the aspect of righteousness in being given a chance to live through and not die, because in essence every chayte should die, as the Yerushalmi says. The answer is it makes sense he shouldn't die because he's not the same that he was before. Before he was like, he was an animal. He was like an animal. Now he brought himself back to his humanity. And therefore he shouldn't die as is, because he's not what he was before. Okay, something still has to atone for what he did before. From that aspect, bring an animal that's similar to what you were when you sinned. Feel how you should have gone through that, and that now will go and atone for that aspect of your sin. It's a very interesting explanation that the Aruch Hayim adds here. Again, he explains it similar to what he says for a chinuch says it, but he adds a dimension of the fact that, you know, but when you do tshuva, you're not where you were before. And that therefore says you shouldn't die for it.
But an animal doesn't sin.
Doesn't make a difference where it sins. You act like an animal. And at that point, you deserved to die. Because you're more than an animal, true. And therefore, you really deserve to die at that point. But now, you're not the same as before. And therefore, it makes sense to say that you shouldn't die and be given a different chance to atone.
That's exactly that's why you have to bring an animal, and you can't bring other stuff.
Okay.
Other stuff.
Now, let's turn to page 592, Perek Yud Pasuk Aleph.
592,
Perek Yud Pasuk Aleph. Okay. V'yikhu b'nei Aaron nadav aviu ishmach tasei. Okay, at this point, what happened? The sacrifices were brought. Moshe and Aaron daven. The fire came down from heaven and consumed the sacrifices on the altar. This is where the Jewish people saw that the Shekhinah, divine presence, was now going to be resting in the Mishkan. The sons of Aaron, Nadav, and Aviu, each one took his fire pan. They put a fire in it. They put on it keteres, the incense. And they brought before Hashem a strange fire, ashaloid tziva oisam, that he, Hashem, never commanded them to do. Fire came out from before Hashem. It consumed them. And they died before Hashem. Okay, the famous story of Nadav and Aviu bringing their own keteres, a fire coming down and consuming their neshamas, and the Torah describes what did they do? They brought a strange fire. What made it strange? Because Hashem never told them to do it. So Rashi here comments on this pasuk. Right, this is Rashi before on pasuk base. Vateitze Eish, and a fire came out. Rabbi Eliezer Oimer. The sage Rabbi Eliezer said, Lo yimesu b'nei Aaron, ela al shidei shahiru halach b'fnei Moshe Rabban. The issue here was, why did they die? Because they issued a halachic decision in front of Moshe, their Rebbe. The question was, I believe, about the fire that they used. Where did the fire have to come from? Could it come from their own? Did it have to come from the altar? Could it come from their own? They passed it to come from their own. But that was the decision they made in front of their Moshe Rabbeinu, was their Rebbe. When you pass an halach, you make a halachic decision in front of your Rebbe, that can get you into big trouble. That was Rebbe Lezer said. Rebbe Shmuel Oimer, Shesuya Yayin Nechnus Elamikdash. You know what happened? You know what went wrong? They were intoxicated. And that's why they entered where they entered with the Keteris. And proof being that was the problem, because what happens after Moshe tells to Aaron that, you know, Hashem was sanctified through those who are close to him, and Aaron was silent. What happened after that? That's where the Hashem spoke to Aaron and said, don't drink wine, and don't drink wine and then do the Avodah. So the fact that the Torah says that right after this shows there's a connection between the two. Now the obvious question is, if Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Akiva are saying that Bnei Aaron died, let's say the first one, they died because they rendered a psak din halacha decision in front of Moshe. But that's not what the Chumash says. The Chumash said they brought a strange fire that they weren't commanded. Is that what Rabbi Shmuel is saying? The fire that wasn't commanded, why wasn't it commanded? Because they passed the halacha in front of Moshe? That's what made it not commanded? Maybe. And Rabbi Akiva says the problem is they were drunk. Doesn't say here they were drunk. Just they weren't commanded. What? So they weren't commanded because they were drunk. But Torah doesn't even say it. So there's a lot to discuss about this. And I heard a very interesting explanation from Rav Gadal Yeshua. Remember him?
I told you the story with me and him.
Okay. I don't remember. You have to tell me later.
Huh?
I don't remember.
Oi.
Okay.
He told me to leave.
Oi.
And I told him if I leave, he says, go to a different yeshiva. I told you about the story.
Okay, but it's being recorded. Let's not put it on. Let's not put it on. Tell me later. Okay. So, explanation given by Rav Gadal Yeshua. And he explained like this. What we have to do is, you got to look at the pasuk. The pasuk says, what was the problem? They brought an offering they weren't commanded to bring. That's what the pasuk says. So what that implies is, what was the problem? What did they do wrong? They never asked if they could bring the keteris, and they brought it anyway. Meaning, this was not part of the regular daily service of bringing the keteris. This was their own voluntary act of bringing the keteris. They were never commanded to do that. There's no such thing as just bringing a keteris on your own. No such thing as doing that. They did that. They weren't commanded to do that, and that was the problem. What is the meaning of understanding where they went wrong? What did they do wrong? How are we to understand the essence of what they did when they brought this keteris on their own without being commanded to? So many of the Mefarshim explain that the reaction of Nadav and Avihu was that after the fire came down and from Shemayim, from heaven, and it burnt the sacrifices, it says the Jewish people, what did it say? The Pasuk says when the fire came down, right? The people saw and sang glad song. They burst out in song. They were so inspired and awestruck by this heavenly fire that came down. They broke out into song. Okay, it was a tremendous uplifting experience. They all broke out in song. So what did Nadav and Avihu do? They also reacted. They were all inspired, elevated, full of Ahavas Hashem, full of love of Hashem. So what did they do? They did something to express it. What did they do? Keteris. They were Kohanim, and they did it. Now, they didn't ask to do it, but they did it. Why did they do it? What made them do it? What made them do it was the reaction that the Jewish people, when they saw the fire, it says they broke it into song, and they fell on their faces. What did Nadav and Avihu do? What was their reaction to this unbelievable, elevating experience? They expressed their love of Hashem by bringing Keteris, which is one of the greatest gifts that we have that we give to Hashem. The problem is, though, they weren't told to do it. What does that mean? So what that means is like this, and this is something that is explained in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that we didn't do yet. But it says, Antignish ish soicha, he said, do not serve Hashem like a servant who serves a master for reward, right? Do it without intent. But the fear of heaven should be on your face. Now, what Antignish ish soicha, when he says, don't do a mitzvah for reward or punishment, vice versa, that means, in what way shall you serve Hashem? Me'ahavav, out of love. Out of love of Hashem, that's how you should serve Him. When you act out of love, you're not looking for reward. It's for the person themselves. But the Mishnah says, but you still have fear of heaven. Now, typically, the love of God is a higher level than the fear of God. But you always have to have the fear of God. Why is that? So what explanation is because when you love someone, because you love that person and you feel a closeness with that person, you may actually sometimes not be as respectful as you should be. The love that you have kind of breaks down any kind of separation, and it kind of, you just love the person, you just want to go and hug them and be close with them. But sometimes that could actually lead to a certain level of lack of respect. Sometimes it could do that. So even when you have a love for someone, you still have to have a certain, be in awe of the person, have a certain respect. You have to, the love says, I want to be close. And Yira says, hold back a little bit. Got to know, sometimes you got to hold back. You've got to love, you got to hold back. You got to go forward, you got to go back. I just recently heard that, I can't remember who says it, but the custom of shuckling, right? The custom of shaking back and forth when you daven. Forward is love. Back is yira.
You're worried you're getting too close.
I mean, it's the idea that you want to get close, but remember, you got to hold back.
Yeah.
There always has to be, even when there's love, there has to be a certain level of control, of holding back, out of respect.
Respect.
Out of respect. Because sometimes the love breaks down all the barriers, and you have to remember, as much as you love, there's got to be respect. There's got to be a certain amount that you hold back from your expression of love. That is where Nadav and Avihu failed. Nadav and Avihu were so overwhelmed and overcome with love of Hashem when the fire came down that they just grabbed the Ketores and they expressed their love through bringing the Ketores. But that's not the right thing. Because even when you love Hashem, and when you love Hashem, you still have to know, you have to hold back. You still have to remember there's a certain amount of respect and a certain amount of awe that you have to have. So you can't just go and do anything you want. There has to be a certain amount of self-restraint out of respect. That's what it means. That Ezav and Avihu, they died because they brought a fire that they weren't commanded. They brought the fire because they were so overwhelmed with love of Hashem, they brought Ketores. But it wasn't commanded. Because a person has to know that even when you have so much love, you still have to know you got to be able to hold back. You have to be able to restrain yourself. Certain amount of restraint you have to have, even in the case of love, because of the fact that there always has to be a certain amount of awe and respect that has to be involved. And that's where Nadav and Avihu failed. So now we could also explain what Rashi means, and when Rashi brings down this saying of Chazal, the problem was they paskin the halacha not in front of their Rebbe, they came in drunk. It's all part of the same issue. They didn't, meaning the explanation of they didn't paskin the halacha in front of their Rebbe, right? What's he trying to say? He's saying that's where they went wrong. What was the problem here? Or in essence, you know, what was the problem here? What was the foundation? What was the background problem here? The background problem here was that they didn't ask Moshe Rabbeinu if they have to do it. You know why they didn't ask? Because they were just overcome with love. But you have to restrain. You have to make sure that you hold back. You can't just go ahead and do something like that. You went ahead and you did an act. You paskin the halacha. You can't just paskin the halacha. You have to ask your Rebbe. That is where that was the saying of Rebbe Lezer. Then Aaron died because they passed the halacha in front of their Rebbe. They passed the halacha in front of their Rebbe. That was the first stage of where, instead of restraining themselves, that they just reacted out of their overwhelming love for Hashem. And that was that was the step. That's what brought them to our eventual downfall of bringing the Keteris that they shouldn't bring. But the first stage of that was the fact that, again, already right there and then, that they paskin that they can use their own fire for Keteris, which was a halacha decision on their own. Forget about that they weren't commanded to bring the Keteris. The fact that they could bring their own fire for the Keteris, that itself was a question that they should have asked. That was something they decided on their own.
There's no matches.
and therefore, that's the first stage of where they went wrong. They passed an halacha in front of the Rebbe. The second thing says, the other Tana says, Rebbe Shmuel says, no, they were drunk. What do you mean they were drunk? They were stopped drinking? They weren't stopped drinking. It was all part of the rejoicing. It was all part of the celebration. It was all part of their tremendous love and expression of elevation to Hashem. The wine that they were drinking was all part of that. The problem is that they ran into the Kodesh HaKadoshim like that. You can't do that. As much as you want to express your love to Rabbeinu Shalom, you have to know there's a point where you got to pull back. You have to have a certain amount of restraint. Again, they didn't restrain themselves. They went and drank. So all these explanations actually are all related to the same idea. That even when a person has a tremendous love of the Rabbeinu Shalom, a person has to make sure that they still know that even with all the love, there's a certain amount that you got to pull back. A certain amount you have to be able not to express your love, because you always have to have a certain level of awe and respect for that person that you love.
Well, they also said, hey, when these two fogies going to die?
It's interesting. That's another thing. Rashi doesn't bring that down for whatever reason, but that would be a very... Does that relate to this exactly? That's something to think about. But at least the things that Rashi brings down, they all would relate to this.
But why even they are wrong? Why the desire of death not forgiveness? I believe.
So on that, the answer to that would be
they are not Korach, they are not Golgotha.
No. But we also know that there is a rule that the greater a person is, the more God demands of him. A smaller sin for a big person is not a small sin, it's a big sin. In this context, it was really about the fact that they were establishing the sanctity of the Mishkan. And in establishing the sanctity of the Mishkan, that had to be established in a perfect form. If you look at the Pasuk, if you look at on page 592, Pasuk Gimel, Vayomer Moshe al Aaron, Moshe said to Aaron, Hu asher dibar Hashem lemar, Bikrevai et kadesh v'aprei kala'am et kaved. Well, those that are close to me, I'll be sanctified, and in front of the whole nation, I will be honored. So Rashi explains that Moshe knew that on the day of the Mishkan being established, that something, a judgment was going to happen that would make it clear to everyone how holy this place is. And it was because of the holiness of the Mishkan, its establishment as a holy place, and the people involved who were basically, to a certain degree, desecrating that holiness, and because of that, they deserved to die. It was all because of the circumstances and the people involved that that's why they died and weren't forgiven.
Did they go into the Kodesh Kodesh?
According to some, yeah, I believe so.
How would anyone know that they
saw it?
They
saw them going in. They saw them going in. They had to take them out. Yeah. Had to get them out of there after they died. They saw them going in. It's not like nobody saw it. They saw it.
I mean,
it was done publicly. They saw it happening. You could see the guy. They could see them going into the curtain. You could see that happening.
Yeah.
Okay. So that is that. Okay. Okay, one last thing. So the pasuk we just read says, Vayera Meshal Aaron, Meshal said to Aaron, Hu asher dibar Hashem leimar, this is what Hashem said, Bekravaya Kadesh, through those that are close to me I shall be sanctified, Vaprei Kalame Kaved, in front of all the nation I will be honored, Vayidaim Aaron. Aaron was silent. So Rashi says on the words, Vayidaim Aaron, Aaron was silent, excuse me, Rashi says, Kibal schar al shtikasei. Aaron received a reward for his silence. Humaschar kibel, what was that reward? Shenisyachin imay hadibur, that he alone received the prophecy, that that parsha that we said later about the prohibition of drinking wine and then going to do the service, that was told to Aaron alone. If you look on page 594, Hashem el Aaron lema, Hashem said to Moshe, to Aaron saying, Yayin v'sheichar, wine, don't drink, etc. This, Rashi learns, was said to Aaron exclusively. And why did he get this exclusive prophecy? Because we know from a different Rashi that Aaron did not get any exclusive prophecies. This one was exclusive because of the fact that that he was silent. Now the Sifsei Chachamim here on this, Vayidam Aaron was silent, and Rashi says, and he received reward for it. So what the Sifsei Chachamim is explaining Rashi. What was Rashi coming to do when he says that Vayidam Aaron kibal schar shikasi, received reward for his silence? Why is Rashi saying this? Just telling us an interesting fact. What's Rashi trying to tell us here? So the Sifsei Chachamim explains that in essence, Rashi is telling us, why did the Pasuk even say Aaron remained silent? Let's say he wouldn't have said Vayidam Aaron. Wouldn't have said anything. So what would you have said? Moshe Rabbeinu told him an explanation. Vayidam, and he accepted. He accepted. If he wouldn't have said anything, he would have just said, you know, if Moshe would have said that, Aaron accepted. Mm-hmm. Right? Or say it a different way. You want Aaron to complain? You expect Aaron to get complained? You expect after Moshe Rabbeinu explained it to him, Aaron's going to say, why? No, I don't accept that. Why did God do this to me? He wasn't going to do that, whether he was happy or not. But he wasn't going to do that. So it's almost like it wouldn't have been, it's not necessary for the Pasuk to have to say Aaron was quiet. Why did it? The answer Rashi says is, the Pasuk is stressing he was quiet to tell us he reserved reward for being quiet. His quietness wasn't just because, what should he say? What's there to say? His quiet was because he accepted it. He accepted it wholeheartedly, and therefore he was rewarded for it. So the Torah is stressing, Vayidim Aaron was silent, to bring out the idea, not to bring out the idea that he was silent, because he's silent, that's what you wouldn't expect he would be doing anything more than being silent. But the Torah telling us he was silent is trying to say there was something unique to his silence, something special to his silence. It was a silence that gained him reward for that silence. Okay, good night, everybody. Have a good Shabbos. Thank you for coming.